Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The great thing about being a dog owner is you stop caring. Look at this. You stop caring. Look at this.
I know. Oh, my. So do you have to bath him every time?
Raymond, he looks like something out of Doctor Who. Oh, my God.
This week on Walking the Dog, I went for a stroll in London's Kenwood with one of pop's most enduring and successful partnerships, Martin Kemp and Shirley Kemp, and their toy poodle, Pops. I'm not sure these two need any sort of introduction. It's Martin and Shirley, for heaven's sake. But just to give you a quick reminder, they met 40 years ago when Martin was the handsome bass player in Spandau Ballet and Shirley was the glam blonde singer in Wham. Martin went on to become a hugely successful actor, starring in The Craze and EastEnders, while Shirley became a devoted mum to their kids Roman and Harley. And now for the first time ever, they've decided to perform together. They've released an album called In the Swing of It, and it was fascinating chatting to them both about how they first met all those years ago. They told me about George Michael coming on their first date, the really tough time they went through when Martin discovered two brain tumours, and why they're both fanatical dog people. Do check out their album, by the way, In the Swing of It, which is really lovely. And you can also catch them live at the Birmingham Symphony Hall on February the 16th and in Manchester at the Bridgewater Hall on the 23rd. I really hope you enjoy my chat with them. I love them. I'm moving in. Here's the Kemps.
Oh, sorry, yeah, this is how it always is. This is only real life.
I'm so excited. Look, Shirley's steaming ahead. Yeah. Is Shirley the main dog walker, Martin? Be honest.
No. Absolutely not. No, we it's a job that we both
I would say
love.
Martin's more persistent, yeah. And he does like two walks a
yeah,
day.
Yeah, it's because I know that when the dogs go out, the happiest time of their day and the thing that they look forward to the most in their life is their walk.
Yeah.
And you can literally see their face go from being really solid to being really happy.
One of our dog literally smiles the whole walk.
Yeah, you can see him smiling. Yeah. So dog walking isn't a chore at all. It is one of the biggest pleasures in my life.
Well, you say that. You haven't been on one with me yet. I can soon change that opinion.
No, it is the most big. It is the biggest pleasure in your life because you see how happy they are.
Yeah. You know. And I always find their sort of curiosity and enthusiasm for the world,
yeah.
It makes you see the world slightly differently.
Also, it's a big chance. You know, I always feel like the moments that I daydream the most and get the most done in my head, you know, because like the work that we live in, the work that we do, is a lot about daydreaming, isn't it? Because
yeah.
That's how you create things, ideas. And the biggest point for me in my day that I daydream and get more done is if I'm in the bath or if I'm walking my dog.
Oh, I like that. He's quite low maintenance, Shirley. All he needs is a walk and a bath.
I know. I'm even lower. I just need a walk.
I'm going to introduce you formally because I'm very excited to have my favourite couple ever.
Oh,
don't tell any of my friends that. On the podcast. This is Walking the Dog. I'm Emily Dean and I'm with the very wonderful Martin Kemp and Shirley Holloman. Shall I call you Holloman or Kemp?
I was Holloman a long time ago. I don't, yeah, Kemp, definitely.
Shirley Kemp?
Yeah.
Yeah, but she's become more Holloman in the last few weeks since we've been doing a record. Everyone seems to go
I
back
know.
To being
Holloman.
Yeah, it shocks Shirley me. Holloman. I'm thinking, Shirley Holloman, who's that? Oh, no, that was me.
Even when they first made the record, right, and we sort of went in to see this record sleeve, the first day.
This is In the Swing of It, which is your album, which is out at the moment.
Well, it was out at Christmas, before Christmas.
Yeah.
But we went in to see the artwork and everything, and it was Shirley Holloman all over it. I thought, where did that happen?
Yeah. So
something you don't know.
No, well, I think when you've got a family and your children are Kemps, you're like, no, don't leave me out. I'm Kemp.
Well, we should say you two have been together for, it's, well,
40
been?
Years.
Nearly 40 years.
40 years.
Yeah.
And you married in 88, is that
88,
right?
88, so yes. Married 31 years.
Yeah.
And let's go back to the beginning. We're going to introduce your dog first.
Yeah.
So we're at Kenwood, which is... You're North London people, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And introduce your dog.
So this is little Pops, Popsy, Pops, whatever I feel in the mood to call her.
Well, her name is Pops.
Pops, well, it's not really... She's called Florence.
Oh, yeah, officially.
I called her Florence when I first got her after my grandmother.
Pops.
No one could say it, so that's why she ended up Pops, but she's officially Florence.
She's absolutely adorable.
She should have been Flossy Florence, though, because she's got a flossy head. So,
yeah.
And what breed
she
is she?
She is a toy poodle.
She's beautiful.
And I've kind of grew up with my dad had every type of dog you can imagine, but my first dog we had was a toy poodle.
Yeah.
So I have a real thing for toy poodles because I know them. I know their characters. So.
And what are their characters?
They are really sensitive. They love hugs. She loves getting up, jumping up on the seat. And I can really feel we're absorbing energy between us. Like she's giving it to me, I'm giving it to her. It's incredibly healing and therapeutic. And they're really loving and they're fun. I mean, she's quite an athlete.
But she's inquisitive.
Shirley, Martin, can you help me? Your dog
sniffing.
People.
Boy dogs sniff a lot more.
Is that
than
what
girl
it
dogs.
Is?
Yeah.
Martin,
yeah.
Can you confirm?
What?
Well, why is he... Oh, now another dog's got involved. Ray's going on
a sniffer.
Well, I don't know, but he stops every 5 minutes.
Yeah, he's a sniffer,
yeah.
Isn't he?
Well, what...
Is, that's what I'm like when I go
How
shopping. I'm just stopping every five
How
minutes.
He's three.
How old?
He's three.
He's three.
He's young, then.
It's quite serious for three, I feel.
Yeah. Is he?
Yeah.
Come on,
oh,
Ray.
Oh, he's having a stretch now.
It's that fur coat you've got on him.
Yeah.
I know.
It's quite long.
I know, but I do like it.
Yeah.
I always wanted a dog that looked like Dougal.
Oh, he's beautiful.
You know,
he's
a magic roundabout.
Oh, you've got one now.
Yeah. I know. Oh, look, he's walking a bit better.
He's good
now.
On
no.
hardwood floors, though. He could polish them up.
I know.
Honestly, you want to put Raymond into Crufts.
Well, when I took Ed Miliband on this podcast,
yeah.
And he said, Raymond is lovely, but he does look like a toupee. Ed Miliband's called my dog
a toupee.
So you guys, I mean, this is sort of was your manor, wasn't it, for a long time? But you're still
so
north, you're Hertfordshire, aren't you?
Yeah,
but
we lived...
We had our babies here.
Yeah.
Our kids went to school in
Not
north
in Kenwood,
London.
I should say.
Well, but
I'm not saying.
To be honest, practically, because we had a house on Hampstead Lane.
Yeah.
Which backed onto
this heath.
So in the Sunday evenings, we would open the windows up and hear the band playing from Kenwood and see the fireworks going up.
Wow.
So
it's so beautiful here, isn't it? I love it.
Yeah.
So, Shirley and Martin, I want to go back to the very beginning.
Yeah.
Talk me through your childhoods. It's like therapy, isn't it?
Wow.
Martin, you grew up in Islington, is that
Islington,
right?
Islington, yeah. Yeah, I grew up in Islington. My mum was a school dinner lady. My dad was a printer, but we had absolutely no money. We were as poor as you can imagine. You know, the outside toilet, no bathroom. It was a house that was shared by... it was kind of like three-storey Georgian terrace that was a council house. The bottom floor was some old lady that we never knew lived there. And it was the rent collection station, right? So as you came through the passage, it would be where everybody queued up in the area to pay their rent. At the end of the passage, there was like that, a little hole in the wall where somebody used to sit behind, and it was like glass slats, and she would take the rent. And then you would walk up the stairs, and there would be our house, but there's no doors, you know, in those days. It would just be landings. So you had, you got to the first landing, and that was ours, where we had a bedroom, two bedrooms, and the kitchen. And
Raymond's quite far behind. Come on, Raymond.
Come on, Ray.
Oh, here he is.
Come on, Ray.
And then upstairs we had our aunts and cousins. And so, you know, it was quite a nice little community in there. We had a kind of family house, but it was council.
And it was you and your brother, Gary.
Yeah, me and Gary, we shared a bedroom there and we had nothing.
Yeah,
I remember my parents crying over the fact they couldn't buy meat and dinner and shoes. See, we had zero, yeah.
And what was your background like, Shirley? Because you came from... Were you from Bushy?
I was from Bushy. Grew up on a council estate in a three-bedroom house with five kids. So I shared a bedroom with my two sisters. and it was quite chaos, quite noisy.
Yeah.
But my dad loved animals. My dad was this huge kind of 6 foot six, quite angry builder.
Quite.
Yeah, had a, he was like Zeus, like the god. Once he shouted, everyone knew about it. But his big, what melted his heart was animals. So we grew up, we always had dogs in the house.
Yeah.
So I think that's where my passion for animals came. But what I noticed was when my dad was around animals, he was much happier, became a totally different, he humanised animals.
Yeah,
but apart
so
from that, I think he had terrible depression and anger issues. So it wasn't, it was a hard childhood in a lot of ways.
And actually, Shirley, what's interesting is, again, that's something you would recognise now. He might get help for, he might have therapy.
Oh, I'm so sad about that, to think that you wouldn't have even mentioned the word depression. Or I wouldn't have understood how many signs there are of depression.
Yeah.
You know, but... yeah, my dad, he would have had a totally different life if he'd actually been diagnosed, because he was really eccentric as well.
Was he?
Yeah. But because he was big, people just got out of his way and let him do what he wanted, so...
So that meant that when you met, would you say that you came from sort of similar backgrounds in some ways?
Not really, because I think Martin's mum and dad were a lot happier than my parents.
Yeah.
I don't think Martin experienced the kind of atmosphere that I'd grown up in.
Yes.
No, when I went to Ranter Shirley's first time, I'll never forget that the atmosphere was so bad. You know, her dad was sitting in the chair. But her dad, God bless him, I think he suffered dementia much earlier than we ever realised. You know, there were problems, and it was before kind of dementia was up front and people were recognising it as much. And I think he suffered from that really early on, and people just weren't realising, you know. I mean, I remember a time when he's a big old Hulk, bulk of a man he was, and he came downstairs and he'd just come out of the bathroom. Do you remember, Shirley?
Yeah.
And he was going out the pub and he was wearing... He's wearing Shirley's mum's Charlie
perfume.
And I thought,
but he'd covered himself in it.
Yeah, and he was smelling like a woman.
Really?
And it was like bizarre.
Yeah.
All these bizarre
things.
And
everyone said to him, "What are you wearing?" And he said, "Charlie." But I think maybe he thought, if I wear women's perfume, women will like it.
Well, yeah. I just think he had dementia much earlier on than anyone realised, you know.
Yeah.
That he thought people were listening in on him all the time. You know, he thought next door neighbours were listening.
Yikes. We are literally in a swamp.
Ray, no, you're not going in that.
Paul,
I'm worried about Ray because he could get lost in the swamp. Come on, Ray.
Come on, Ray.
Come on, Shirley's sinking.
We'll go here.
It's going to be like a Tarzan movie.
This is my worst thing, mud.
What is?
I hate mud.
Oh, I don't like
it
mud.
It really goes through to my
I prefer
soul.
Mud to rain, though.
I don't like mud or rain. Like, if it's going to be winter, I'd prefer a really
What do you like?
I like walking the dog in the rain, don't you?
Do you?
No, I don't.
I love it.
No, I think men like that.
Yeah, Martin's quite hardcore on it.
Yeah, but men like that because they think they're being like a sort of Bear Grylls thing.
Yeah.
I'd prefer
That's
a
what it is.
You can get my camping knife out and everything.
What, in Kenwood? In Hampstead?
Yeah.
Martin and his camping knife?
Yeah.
Oh, it's been hell out there, Shirley, in MW3 today.
The torch.
I went to... Anna Scher's, the drama school in North London. And I think you went there. I'm saying you went there too.
There.
Like, yeah. I would have been there a bit, sort of after you, I think. I was there sort of in the 80s. But everyone talked about you. And I can remember seeing pictures of them on the wall.
In the
as
end,
you
like,
go
yeah,
in.
I know Martin and Gary Kemp went here. Forget, get over it.
It was, I mean, I loved it. You know, I honestly, Anna Scher's drama theatre, the first one, happened inside Bentham Court in Islington.
Right.
And it was right across the road from my house. So Gary went there early on,
he's a good girl.
As soon as it opened. But I was the shyest little boy you can ever imagine.
Really?
And my mum put me there really to get rid of my shyness, not to turn me into an actor. And so, but when I went there, I loved it. What Anna was doing for the local area was unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, it was all these kids that never had another chance in life. She was giving them the idea that there was a way out.
Yeah.
You know, it was all these kids that never had another chance in life. She was giving them the idea that there was a way out.
Yeah.
And she did incredible things. And for me and Gary, I honestly believe that Anna Scher gave me my personality.
Really?
She built my personality for me, yeah.
I think you're so lucky to have, that's one thing I would love, being in a big family of five kids.
Yeah.
I was really ignored.
Were
and
you?
And I loved to dance, sing. If I had had something like Anna Scherer open up where we lived, that would have been my saving grace, but no.
Did you think you were going to go into singing and dancing then, Shirley, at that point? Or did you want to be a singer? Or did
I wanted to be a ballerina. The first thing, and I was
I can
really,
see you as a ballerina.
Double
She's got the legs.
I could stand on my toes when I was younger. I would dream, play around, dance, and everyone would say, get out of the way, sit down. So I naturally think I should have been and then can't get out now, we're locked in. We just have to go ahead.
Hang on, Martin Kemp, old Bear Grylls can help us.
Yeah,
get your pen knife out.
I've got the screwdriver with me today. We'll have to walk round.
Oh dear, we're trapped.
Will we climb over?
We can climb over, yeah.
I mean, I'd be prepared to.
I'm happy to climb over.
We're climbing over the fence. Oh, I'm not doing it as well as these two. They're country people.
Mind shot. What's happened to
him? Oh, poor Ray.
He just got a
prick. He's carrying half a forest with him.
In his foot?
On his undercarriage. he needs to go to the waxer. Yeah. Come on, Ray. So, yeah, so you had wanted to be a singer, you were saying.
No,
you wanted to be a ballerina.
You know what? The one thing my mum and dad loved was music. So yeah. I got my love of music from my dad, because on a Sunday he'd play all these Beatles, every type of record you could imagine, and he taught me to jive.
Yeah.
So that was my other association with my dad, when my dad was in a good mood, was when he played music. So they are the biggest things I've inherited, is my love for music and my love for animals from my dad.
Oh, nice.
Because that's when he was in his good mood.
Yeah.
So as a child you picked that up. And my mum used to sit down and we used to watch all the gorgeous old Hollywood movies. And I'd literally feel every emotion and just think, oh, I just want to be one of those actresses when I wake up.
Little chihuahua. Here's a cutie.
Now, is there a chihuahua in your family?
Yes.
Yeah.
Roman's got a chihuahua.
Roman, your son has got one.
Little Luna. So we look after her a lot.
Little Luna.
We've had so many different breeds of dogs. I love it. So I love it when you see them, you know all their characters.
They're sort of playing. Pops.
Oh, are they?
Pops was getting the confidence up with Ray there. I want to know your dog voices, okay? Because this is mine, which is quite an intimate, embarrassing thing, is how you talk to your dog.
Yeah.
And I say, good boy, Ray Ray. Good boy, Ray Ray. Ray Ray, good boy. When no one's looking. So, Shirley, I want to hear your dog voice, please.
So when I speak to Harley's dog, Oscar,
yeah.
Hey, mummy boy, hey, mummy boy. Ooh. And when I speak to Pops, it'll be Pops, hey, mummy girl, she's mummy's girl. So with her, I go much higher, and with the boy dog, I go, hey, mummy boy.
I want to wait until the leaf bright, that's safely gone now, because Martin Kemp is not getting away without doing his dog voice. On this podcast.
My dog voice. I don't really,
have,
really
one.
Have
one.
He does.
He does.
No, I talk to him the same as I talk to anyone else. And I like it like that.
Yeah, I don't think. I think it's more of a girl's thing anyway.
Do you think
I've never
so?
Been, I don't. You know, when the kids were babies, I didn't have baby voices.
No.
But I don't have a dog voice really. I just talk to him like another person.
Are you? You're very good with the poo bags, I notice.
Ah, you've got to be, haven't you? But we do, you know, we try and get a...
I worry about the poo bags.
But eco-friendly ones
yeah,
we get.
I do. I get the green
eco-friendly ones.
The green ones, yeah.
I want to go back to you guys met. And I know everyone is endlessly fascinated by your relationship. And what I find interesting about that is, I suppose it kind of says so much about how rare it is, in a way, that a couple stay together as a family. That it's just, oh my God, they're in showbiz and they're still together and... The story of how you met is pretty famous, but I can't get enough of it. So I'd like to hear again. Martin, I know when you first saw Shirley, because she was wearing a white dress.
Yeah, she was on top of the Pops. Yeah, I was at my mum and dad's house, and I was sitting with my back up against the sofa on the floor. You know how you do. And watching Top of the Pops on a Thursday night, and Wham came on doing Young Guns. And it was the first time that I ever saw Shirley. And she was wearing that beautiful white dress.
Which one? Because I'm very, so I'm
Melissa
very specific.
Melissa
I still have this.
Was it the tight one or the...
Yeah, the fish tail I know
it. Yes, it's
front.
Quite short in the front.
And she was wearing that. And it was kind of like I fell in love through the television screen, which was really odd. But that's how it was.
You were in Spandau Ballet at that point, and you were sort of pretty successful yourself, weren't you?
Well, reasonably, you know.
Oh, you were.
We were only 2 albums in, you know, and the second album didn't do that well. You know, we struggled on the second album, like a lot of groups do, you know. And the first album did really well. The second album we only had one hit on, and that was Chart Number One.
And did you want to go into music from a young age?
I was in love with charisma. I was in love with anybody who had charisma. And I didn't really understand what it was at that time, you know. I was in love with Bruce Lee and Marlon Brando, Elvis Presley, and all of that. Anybody that was shone out from everybody else,
kind of
I loved. And it was kind of like, that's what I wanted.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know what it was, whether it was acting, whether it was being in a band or anything. But I just wanted, I loved that charisma that people had. And so for me, when I was 17 and I left school and my dad said to me, what do you want to do? My dad got me an apprenticeship in the print, which for my area.
And this is the print works.
Yeah. And for my area and for the amount of qualifications that I walked out of school with, which weren't very many, it was a really good job.
Yeah.
So, but I knew that the happy people that I'd ever met in my life were ones that were doing their hobbies.
At that point, because you joined, it was Gary, your brother, that started the band, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then he asked you to join, or he was a bit reluctant for you to join.
Gary was reluctant, yeah. It was my mum who told him, you know, you take him with you or not at all. So it was...
What I like about that is your mum acting like a sort of lad's night out.
I'll tell you exactly what it was. Steve Norman, who was the saxophone player in the band, he was having his 18th birthday party, and I was standing next to a guy called Steve Dagger.
Yes.
Who is the manager of Spandau Ballet now. And he said to me, completely out of the blue while we were drunk, I want you to be in the band. And this was a dream for me, because previous year I'd just been like the roadie. I'd been carrying their equipment, I'd been setting it up on stage, I'd, you know, watch them play.
And it's a lovely roadie, Shirley.
I was so jealous, you can't imagine. All I wanted was to be in that band. That's all I ever wanted. I used to go to bed at night dreaming that I was in the band. So when Steve Dagger said to me, I want you to be in the band, it was like this massive door of opportunity that opened up for me. And I walked through it, you know, and I had to talk to Gary, because Gary wasn't that sure about the idea, because, you know, he didn't want his little brother following him around. So...
Well, that's interesting.
I ended
though,
up in the band.
Because I feel that Shirley sort of, that was similar for you in some ways. In that
I think we've definitely had very similar beginnings.
Yeah.
In the fact where we were in life, like I'd kind of been this person who loved all that dance music but was ignored. And there's Martin next to his brother who's in the band getting the limelight.
Yeah.
So we both kind of wanted it.
And then how did you end up in Whammers? Because you were dating, I'm sorry to mention this, Martin. I don't want it to be awkward, but Shirley was dating Andrew Ridgely, just so you know.
Yeah, but he's uglier than me.
That was a long time ago.
You see, I'm impressed that you can be such good friends with Andrew. I need you to never exist anymore once I've dated them.
Listen, well, Martin's so confident.
Listen, I'm old enough and wise.
So that's what's good.
I'm old enough and wise enough to cope with more than you can imagine.
I can handle when they were 17, 18. That's
yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
So what did...
So with the initial... Really, the real truth of it was that George, me and Andrew were incredible friends. I'd kind of been this punky girl before I met them.
Oh, really?
So they kind of thought I had this edge to me. And I drove a car and they were younger. But all three of us really just got on and just loved music. And we'd go to George's bedroom and they were in this band that wasn't working.
Yeah.
Called The Executive. But then what we would do would make up dance routines in George's bedroom. And then we'd go to this club and George and I, or George and Andrew, would dance to like, you know, New Romantic, Heaven 17, Human League.
Oh, I love that.
Don't You Want Me, Baby. I remember that song so much, dancing to that. And that just formed such a deep bond for us. Oh, my goodness. Oh, this is Squelch.
Look at them.
Give me a minute, I'll get my crampons.
No, you'd lost the plot that we were doing the interview. You walked off.
Well,
because I started. I started to tell my story.
No, I know, but I was sinking.
And you walked off as if you'd had enough of
Shirley,
my story.
I was just about to call for help.
The great thing about being a dog owner is you stop caring. Look at this. You stop caring. Look at this.
I know. Oh my. God. So do you have to bath him every time?
Raymond, he looks like something out of Doctor Who. Oh my God!
How dare you, Martin Kemp?
No, he does though. I'm just sent with all this mud on him. And
he's beautiful.
Way.
Oh my God!
Oh look, there's a.
We're picking all the bits out of you.
Yikes!
I don't think we're going to have to take you to the groomers.
Yeah.
What were those little Furby things that Doctor Who had in the 70s?
He looks like a Furby.
That had a silver ball in them.
Come on, you. So
I don't know.
No.
Let's just forget my story because
it's a good story.
It's
show.
Not
you
very
tell
good.
It.
Should I move forward a bit? Anyway,
well, no,
so wham have happened.
Yeah.
But I saw a picture of Martin in a magazine, and I was like, oh my God, who is that? He's not only is he good looking, but I always say this and it's repetitive, but he looked really kind. And I remember laughing when I said to George, oh God, looks really kind. He went, oh, don't be stupid, he's just good looking. They, you know, good looking people look kind. I was going, no, it's not that. So then I became a bit obsessed with asking every photo shoot. Then Wham got, were on TV, etc. And we used to do these photo shoots for magazines. I used to ask everyone, do you know Martin Kemp? And then one day I said to this photographer, do you know Martin Kemp? He went, yeah. I said, do you? I really like him. Where does he go? And he said, he goes to the Wag Club. So we were starting to go to the Wag Club anyway, because it was kind of... I just drove everyone up the wall. Do you know Martin Kemp? So I went to the Wag Club, and I saw him. We all went to a premiere at a theatre, and my friend said to me, stand out here. But that night I had no makeup on. It was quite tomboyish, wasn't very girly, despite the dress. I kind of naturally just wore trousers and all the time. And Martin was there that night. I'm getting out of breath now. And
he gave you his number.
He came over and he had more makeup on than I did. He had more hair and hairspray than I had. And I was like, oh no, I didn't know he wore all that makeup. But he gave me his number.
But it was 1982.
Yeah. It's what pop stars wore in the 80s.
It wasn't like new romantic makeup. It was like, I want to be
Liberace.
Elvis makeup.
Yeah, it was more Liberace.
Wasn't Liberace. It was Elvis.
So he gave me his number, and I kept that number because in our days, once again, we didn't have mobile phones. So if you called this number, it was the house landline.
Yeah.
And normally the parents would answer it. And George gets into me, you've got his number. I can't believe you're not calling him. I was just so shy and scared and thought, oh, he doesn't really want me to call him. And anyway, so we're at George's house and he ran to his sister's phone, dialed the number and just handed me the phone. He's going, you've got to do this. I think because he wanted to be friends with Spandau because he was a massive Spandau fan.
Yeah.
So it's a kind of bit of kudos for him as well. And Martin's mum answered. And I thought, oh, how many girls must be calling to speak to Martin? And I thought, I'm just another girl calling. And I said, can I speak to Martin, please? And Martin came on.
Oh, nice. Yeah, let's go.
Martin came on the phone and went, I'm so glad you called me. And I just felt this light go on, like genuine. He really was genuinely pleased I called him.
And then you went on the first date and... George Michael came along on your date, which is rather strange.
Well, it wasn't strange because I lived in Bushy with my parents. So I had to drive all the way up to London and I didn't want to go on my own. So I said to him, would you come with me? And him being quite a Spandau fan, I think he was quite keen to come because he didn't know anyone famous.
You've got to remember here, right? The truth of it is he wasn't the George Michael at that
point.
Yeah,
he was up and
coming.
He was
Shirley's mate.
Spandau were bigger than us.
He was in a band.
Yeah.
He was just a kid in Wham then. So he was quite keen.
But all he kept saying to me was, I remember on that night, all he kept saying, I just want what you've got. I just want what you've got, Spandau have got. I just want that.
What was that, Martin?
It was the success. And it was like the fact that
recognition, I guess.
Yeah, and the fact that people were listening to our records in America. And he kept saying to me, I want that. That's what I want.
And it was that critical sort of... Do you think it was that as well, that idea of being taken seriously, I suppose?
Well, yes. I weren't taken seriously at the time. I remember it clearly, and I remember knowing deep inside how... I knew how talented George was, and I knew that he'd be there. Look, you know, his music would go on a lot longer than most of the bands that were out there.
Yeah.
I just knew that about him because it was just so obvious, his talent.
Yeah.
But I remember, yeah, people going, oh, disposable bands like Worm and...
Clever with it because what he created was he opened the door for himself with a bubblegum pop, but as soon as he could, he moved out. And he was really clever with it.
Yeah.
He could have been really kind of played safe and kept going with that, but he didn't. He stopped and he moved into something more serious and stepped up. And that was his way in, which is really bright.
Did you know he was coming on the date? What happened?
Did I? I didn't know. No, I meant to meet Shirley.
You've got to remember, I didn't know Martin and I wasn't experienced in dating.
I thought we were going on a date.
It was like my first date, really.
I thought me and Shirley were going on a date. And it wasn't that at all. She had brought her mate. And
yeah, I was a bit intimidated by the whole Spandau lot. I felt kind of like the little girl next door, to be honest, who's kind of met the pop star. Yeah, I did feel that.
You see, it's weird because I used to look at you on Tour de Pops and I thought, God, imagine being that woman. I really remember that. You were so sort of confident and leggy and cool. And I wonder back then, you don't realise whether that was a, you know...
Oh, it's an act.
Yeah.
From all those movies that I used to watch, Doris Day films and Greta Garbo, you know, all the old Hollywood films. I used to see how they acted and thought, OK, when you go on television, you've got to act
confident.
It's all
a facade, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know.
Were you shy as well? When
I was with Spandau.
Yeah.
No, by then I'd shaken it off. I was the shyest little boy you can ever imagine when I was 9 or 10. And that's why my mum and dad put me to drama school. But by then I'd done like a whole list of TV shows from Comedy Playhouse, Play for Today, all of those 1970 TV shows.
I'd love to have had that experience that you had.
But you know, I think what's interesting, and I don't know what you feel about this, I felt doing acting as a kid, it is really good for your confidence, but in a strange way, what it can do, is get you used to being on. Do you know what I mean? That was the only thing. So it was like, oh, if I'm like this and bubbly and then there became a sort of slight, when you're on and when you're not on. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
I can see that.
Yeah.
But for me, it was about, it became, I think I worked so much as a kid. Mm. I did like something like, by the time I was 15, I had like 30 TV shows behind me.
Yeah.
And it became my personality.
Yeah.
It wasn't on or off. That was me.
Yeah.
And because I think, but when I first went to drama school, I didn't have that personality. So it just became me. That's when I was saying earlier, I said I think Anna Sher gave me my personality.
It tapped into that side of you that was probably an extrovert wanting to come out.
Yeah.
But I think also when you see people sort of not settling down in that way, not having that stability and that family life, you know, I expect you did have, having you saying, don't be a dick, Martin. I'm not saying you ever said that. But that's important, isn't it? To have someone who knew you before all that.
Of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely is. I think, though, the way that I look at mine and Shirley's relationship is the same way that my mum and dad showed me how to... I think my mum and dad taught me how to love and how to be inside a relationship, you know, by watching them, you know. So I think a lot of that goes down to them as well.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We need to talk about your collaboration because I'm very excited by this and I love it, by the way. I've heard it and it is so brilliant. Oh, and you've got a fantastic voice. I've forgotten how beautiful your voice is.
Thank you.
It really is.
So much
fun.
Yeah,
it's amazing singing with Martin. I mean, that's what, you know what the shock of it was, because I'm obviously in my late 50s, didn't think I'd ever be working, just thought Martin's the one who works and I love being at home with a dog. I really love being at home with the dogs. It was such a shock for me to go back out and sing because I was like, well, I don't do that anymore. That's someone who I used to be. And as soon as I went in the studio, I just enjoyed it so much and realised how much of myself I'd actually closed down all those years. It's like, why did I close myself down to that? But I think really it was because when we were younger and in bands, there was a lot of pressure and we didn't have that pressure with this album. It was just see how it does. It doesn't matter how it does. Right.
I think so. What the album did for Shirley, though, was more than just singing. It was, I think Shirley as a person had just plateaued, you know, and was starting to become kind of stagnant, you know. And
I'm trying to take that as a positive.
Hang on, I'm getting to the good bit.
Stagnant?
No, I'm saying you plateaued. But I can tell you this, that when we did the album, Shirley's mojo was switched back on. And yeah, not just for in a relationship, but in life, her mojo was switched back on. All of a sudden, she was more interested in stuff. She's come to life again.
Well, I'm a creative person, and I like the creative journey of, you know, the photo shoots, the video, the imagery, choosing the music, finding songs that you're singing with intention that mean something to you, not like these pop songs that are just endless, you know.
You were a creative person, you were making music, you were performing, you wanted to have kids, obviously. And that's a form of creating, and creating lives and identities. Yeah. And then those kids go off and leave the nest, and then you're like,
that was
I want a project
time.
Now.
That was a really empty time for me.
It was exactly that. That's what I'm talking about when Shirley had plateaued. When the kids left home.
It's getting back to
I'm just saying, you were stagnant. I'm just
We've just moved on from stagnant.
I am saying, right, that Shirley had just plateaued. You know, the kids had left home.
Him and his plateau.
Shirley had left home. The kids had left home.
Plateaued on
and
the bench.
Me and Shirley were both suffering from empty nest syndrome. Yeah. Both of us were.
Yeah.
You know, when Harley left home, it was hard for Shirley, and when Roman left home, it was really hard for me. Because you don't just lose them, you lose all their mates, and you lose all the noise, and you lose all the bringing their schoolwork home, and all of that. And for Shirley making the album, it was like putting the switch back on. And saying, here it is, there's a new part to life that we never discovered.
It's being connected again. I always say you lose yourself when you're disconnected, which is a much better word than saying stagnant. But disconnected from, you do disconnect. When you become a mother and a wife, you really disconnect from a lot of things and you can lose your confidence. Like
your identity is tied in with your family.
Also, like you can go to events with Martin and I could really feel how I was totally ignored. Because it's Martin. And once I'd even got pushed out of the way, and I remember thinking, this is insane.
I did that by accident.
Yeah. But it's not that I wanted that attention, but it is interesting. Yeah. So interesting watching people's body language and how, you know, I could see people like that around George as well, how they suddenly fall over themselves to please him. And then I could go to the same restaurant a week later and they totally have ignored me being rude to everyone and think, oh, it's funny how you were totally different the other week. But it makes you lose your confidence a bit because you kind of got, well, I've got nothing to say. No, I haven't done anything that interesting. I've done things meaningful to me, but nothing that's been on television. I mean, basically, people are very impressed if you're in magazines and television. It's very narrow.
Well, we lived in LA for a few years. And that's the ultimate of that. Yeah,
yeah,
that is networking
incredible.
City. If you if somebody sits next to you and they can't get anything out of you, then they move on.
To say you don't work in LA, we went for a big dinner one night with a lot of actors, and and someone sat next to me and goes, "Hey, what are you doing?" I said, "Oh no, I was pregnant with Roman. I'm having a baby. I don't work, literally." The look on his face is, I've come all the way out for dinner. This woman can do me no favours. She is not going to get me anywhere in life.
And that's
how it
is.
Back on me.
Yeah,
but
if you say I'm raising my kids, it's like you've just gone to the bathroom.
Yeah, I'm devoting my life to give these two a good life.
You learn quickly out there, as soon as you accept that, then you know where
you
stand.
If you go to LA, just bullshit, basically.
Don't take it seriously.
Don't take it seriously. Just that's
And that was after you did The Craze. you got cast in the craze, and then suddenly both your lives changed because you go to LA. Obviously, you're getting all these opportunities, and then you had a bit of a shit time.
Yeah.
Because of, well, you tell me what
happened. Well, we were out there. How long were we out there before I was sick?
3 years.
Three years we had out there. Yeah, 3 years, and then on the last year, Shirley, we were out there 2 years, and then the riots happened. The Rodney King riots.
That was scary.
And we got caught right in the middle of that. And it was scary, you know. Our house was on the beginning of the Hollywood Hill as you overlooked LA. And you could just see like 1,500 fires and warehouses going up in smoke. There were shooters on the buildings. It was terrifying. And we had like Harley there, who was only three, just coming up for three at the time.
Yeah. Mm.
So it was terrifying. And so Shirley, quite rightly, wanted to leave.
Yeah.
And so we, Shirley, I think as soon as the curfew was lifted, we got out of there, and that was it for Shirley. You know, she had enough.
But also, you had that lump on your head that I kept telling you about.
Did you feel it?
Yeah, I could feel this lump on his head. And when we were living in LA, and I said, would you go and see this doctor? And I don't know to this day if he did see the doctor. And he just came home and he said, oh, no, he didn't say anything.
Well, no,
so I don't know if you did go to the doctor.
No, he didn't. He didn't say anything, yeah. I mean, it was just like, because it was very difficult. It came up really quickly, that lump. Mm. And it wasn't soft tissue lump. Mm. It was skull. So it was the bone.
Before,
so it felt like it was just your skull. Mm. But you could feel there was a little edge coming up on it. And that edge grew really quickly. And what it was that the tumour that had been in there like 10 or 15 years had no more space to go down and push the brain out of the way.
So
it started to come
up
and it grew into the skull. Incredible. So the skull reacted as if it was broken and to protect itself and started to thicken. So, as if, you know, when you break your arm, you get a little bit of extra calcium on it.
Yeah, because bones are soft fibre anyway, aren't they? So it's just moving with
your body's
tumor.
Trying to heal itself.
So it started to thicken, but that thickness, that started to thicken. It went really quick. And within 6 weeks, it was like huge. So
we'd come back to England, hadn't we? We're literally living on
this road.
No, I
was in Vancouver.
Oh, right. No, but when we came back, which was up the road here on Highgate, in Highgate. Martin, I said to him, please go to the doctor again, the lump's got bigger. I was even asking people to feel it. I said, feel Martin's head, can you feel a lump? And then he went to our local doctors.
They said, do you want to feel my husband's lump?
Excuse me, 10p a go.
Yeah. But I remember being in Vancouver.
It was terrifying when we got the call.
It kind of like rammed home to me. I was filming in Vancouver. I was doing an episode of The Outer Limits.
Yes.
Playing this scientist that had invented the cure for everlasting life. But obviously it all goes wrong.
You know?
He becomes like, all of a sudden he's 200 years old. And so they were pulling this bald cap on me in makeup. And as they pulled the bald cap on me, everyone went quiet and was looking at it. And it was just so deformed because obviously it just made it stand out even
more.
Yeah,
of course.
And so I flew home from there and I think within a day I was having it taken out. And I think the saddest thing out of all of that was that when I found out I had the brain tumour is that we had to sell this house in Highgate that we had, the one that we're talking about overlooking this park.
Yeah.
Because I knew that I had to downsize because I didn't even know if I was going to get through it.
Yeah.
So I had to just bring everything in and make everything smaller. So we lost that house and, just to make sure that everything was in order in case I died, basically.
God, how terrifying. That must have been so frightening for you, Shirley.
And we sold it
to Amanda Holden and Les Dennis.
Les Dennis, yeah.
It was terrifying, mainly because I had just had Roman was one and Harley was four and a half. And my biggest fear was for my children to lose their dad. That was the scariest feeling. And I kind of felt I went through a really angry phase. I was furious.
Yeah.
And I'm not the type, what I realised, I'm not very good at asking anyone for help or talking to anyone about it. So I kind of really went in and I got through. I must have bought every self-help book in the 90s that was out there. I had like...
Less Traveled.
Oh, everything. Yeah. Deepak Chopra. I was into Louise Hay. I mean, everyone, every soul story I could find. I had to find a feng shui.
I was talking to Roman about this. He tells this great story one day when he comes home. And he comes back from school, walks into the living room, and there's like five shamans in there blessing the house with his crystal ball healing. And he says there was a point, so Roman said he just didn't know what was going on. There were all sorts of people
around.
My children
went through, like, I mean, that's what's made them so kind of fun. They, you know, open-minded.
You need,
now.
That's the other thing.
That was my therapy.
Yeah, of course.
My kind of spiritual self-help side really kicked in. My music was Alanis Morissette.
Oh.
I sang my heart out to songs because they were such a great release.
I wonder if, as well, it's interesting when you were talking about just growing up in a family where there was just tension, you carry stuff through like that in your life a bit, where asking for help, do you know what I mean? I think that's quite common. If you're someone who just wants to get on and look after things, you think, well, at least if I go to someone external, I'm not bothering the family with
it's exactly that.
Do you know what I mean?
That's what therapy is.
That's
that you're talking to a stranger.
My feeling was no one can help me, because I was angry, because I remember saying to, because Martin had two brain tumors at the same time, and I was angry with the surgeon when I said, why has he got them? He said, we don't know. That answer, my jaw just dropped. I was like, what do you mean? I just felt like, why doesn't he know? I'm gonna have to find out. So that kind of just led me on to thinking about the mind, body, spirit. Why do we get sick? What's it got to do with our thoughts and our health? And I really opened up huge information. And I still think to this day, all that what I went learned helped me help Martin get better.
Mm. Really?
Yeah. Oh, listen, without a doubt, you know, Shirley saved my life. Because, without a doubt, because I remember... You know, Shirley just said I had two brain tumours. You know, one, the big one on the outside that they cut away straight away. But there was, while they were looking at that one, they also found one that was right in the middle of my brain that they didn't know how to get to. And so they said, let's leave it, see if it grows fast or slow, see what happens to it. And it, obviously, it grew fast, right? So within 2 years, they called me back in. They said, we're going to have to take this one out. So I said, how are you going to do it? And Shirley was standing there in the doctor's with me, and he said, we're going to take the lid off the metal plate that they put on, go back down the middle of the brain, open that up. There's going to be all sorts of collateral damage while they do
it's
it.
It's far too dangerous.
And he said, but we're going to cut it out. And so Shirley said, nope, we're not doing that.
Did you?
And I remember clearly saying, looking at Shirley saying, Shirley, stop, you're not a doctor. Let the guy do what he wants to do. You know, like every man does, you know. And I said, let's get on with it. And Shirley said, no, we're not doing that. And so she went away, and her and George phoned around everywhere looking for an alternate way to do it. And they come up with a guy called Professor Black.
Yeah, right? I think he was in Boston.
And he called me one night and he said, there is a different way to do this. He said, we've never tried it before on the type of brain tumour you've got, but if you want to give it a go, it's going to be better
radiation
than having it...
Because it's not invasive, and actually to have a second surgery.
Yeah. Well, when you've got, especially because
the surgeon... He said to me, it's going to cause all sorts of problems.
Yeah, like, you won't be able to walk, you'll go blind.
But he called me one night, this Professor Black, and he called me and he said, I want to give it a go in a different way. He said, the machine that we've got is only one in the world. He said, that I want you to go to. I said, okay, I was going to go anywhere. You know, he said, it's 20 minutes from your house. God. He said, it's in Bart's Hospital. So we went down there, didn't we?
Yeah.
And they zapped it.
And since then, brain tumour, gamma therapy.
Gamma knife therapy
is huge now.
Isn't that amazing?
Incredible, yeah.
And you were saying during that period, that's interesting what you said about therapy. We can walk, should we walk?
Let's do it.
It's interesting because I'm a big fan of therapy.
Should go around this edge of the path here. No mud here.
Let's stand apart,
Have you had therapy, you guys?
Oh, yeah.
After that.
Do you both have it?
Oh, I've had real alternative therapy, real shame and stuff. I've gone to the other world with my therapy.
Martin, were you... I'm not making assumptions about men and generally, but I think sometimes, not always.
Men don't like to do it, yeah.
Sometimes
I agree.
Men are more reluctant.
Yeah, and I was reluctant, and Shirley kind of tricked me into it.
Yeah.
Right? She sent me to this fella, and she told me that it was a massage, right? And it wasn't.
Sorry, that is really.
Yeah.
Just a nice massage.
So while he was massaging my back and my head, right, he started to do therapy and he started to talk to me. And what I realized was I would go there, cry my eyes out every morning, right, and just open up to him.
It's really good to talk to that guy.
That massage. Is the therapist ringing up going, Shirley, I can't keep doing this massage thing. I'm a professional psychologist.
Exactly. It was win-win.
But that is interesting, and I think you, when you were saying about crying, a lot of men do get associate that with weakness and.
Oh, I've never done that.
No, though. Martin's, I think, always been.
I think.
Yeah, you've always been. Listen, really, I grew up as an actor,
you
know,
where you try and make yourself cry.
I think that's part of the attraction, is that he knew his sensitive
really?
Side and embraced
who's,
it.
Who's more likely to cry out of
both
you two?
Of us.
Do you?
50-50.
Which one?
When you argue, which I'm sure never happens.
Never.
If you.
I've lost
who's
my
the peacemaker?
Martin.
Always. Shirley cannot say sorry.
It's very hard to say sorry.
Yeah.
For years.
Shirley's in a half over here. What do you do?
I will go over to Shirley and I would try and say sorry and say let's forget about
it.
And Shirley cannot forget about it for at least 2 days.
No, now he gives me this smile and I'm like, okay, we're back on. It's all good.
Or she might.
That's what we say, we're back on, yeah, we're back on.
Or she goes to stay with Harley, our daughter, for a day and that'll get over it.
Oh. I'm not an arguer. I don't like arguing.
I don't mind. Just, we like, don't I'll argue, though.
I just walk out.
We don't argue that
Let
much.
Let me get over it. Let me deal with it.
We don't argue that much,
no,
do we?
No. You know? Because I grew up with parents who argue constantly.
Yeah.
And I was a very sick child, and I think most of my illnesses came from tension of listening to parents argue. And I think that's such a cruel thing to do to children, is like create a household where the parents are arguing.
See,
and shouting.
But Shirley's really funny as well, and she makes me laugh all the time. So.
Yes, like, I can see there's a very playful dynamic between you two.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And I remember someone saying once, it was actually a therapist who said to me, that's when what keeps a relationship going is that sense of, I suppose, respect for each other.
Yeah. Of course it is.
And then they always said that word contempt. When contempt creeps in, that's when it's over.
Yeah.
And you can really sense it. You know when couples sort of have a playful exchange and there's just a tone which is like, I'm angry about other
but
stuff.
But we can laugh at each other.
Yeah.
Because what we've gone through of Martin being so seriously ill, you stopped sweating the small stuff.
Yeah.
And you just have, like, my gratitude for everything was doubled when Martin was sick. If we argued, I should think, oh, it's so lucky that you're here, that we're arguing. I just was so happy that he got through what he had gone through, because it was huge.
I think that stays with you forever, you know.
Yeah, it changes you as a person. You're never the same again. Any sort of trauma like that, I think you just...
Yeah, because you hit, you know, you hit rock bottom.
Yeah.
And that was absolutely the lowest we could ever imagine going.
Yeah.
So,
Come here.
We didn't... It wasn't just my health. We lost everything. It was like starting the scratch.
And it had financial implications.
Oh,
everything.
Goodness, yeah, of course.
Everything was hit. Your health, your finance,
but then
your
you
future.
Know who your friends are as well.
It's and such a raw feeling.
Yeah.
And you see life for what it really is. And sometimes it's an incredible thing to happen to you, because it's the biggest wake-up call you could ever imagine. And it keeps you grounded. And I think it definitely kept Marty and I grounded. And I think even my children experience, you know, from what they remember is their dad was sick and how we stick together as a family.
You said, Martin, I really respected how honest you were about Spandau Ballet. You've told some really funny stories of it. You said your egos had just got enormous and...
Oh, yeah, of course.
And do
you... You leave the planet, you know.
Do you think so?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you end up living in a bubble when you're... I always think back in the 80s, you know, the two biggest bands were us and Duran Duran.
Yeah.
And we kind of... We,
what about
well, no, I'm saying early on...
Okay, yeah.
I'm talking about proper bands. No,
Martin, you're not welcome on this walk anymore.
No, but we were like a classic band. No, hang on, we were like a classic band with guitars and drums and bass and that kind of band, like the Beatles.
Yeah, but then you went stagnant,
weapons.
Martin.
Yeah, but we were like the Beatles.
I was the stagnant one. I didn't have a.
Oh, bench. I'm going home in a minute.
Go on,
Martin. We love you. You know what I saw recently? Because I was so excited to meet you two. Because I've been
it's
a big fan of both of yours in your respective fields, and well, it's kind of the same fields, but you know.
Yeah.
And you know what I saw, which really almost made me cry, was there's a clip of your This Is Your Life, Martin, on YouTube.
Yeah.
And Shirley looking very glam in a lovely gown.
Ghost dress.
Was it ghost?
Red ghost,
I thought
yeah.
it was.
Yeah.
And there was that bit at the end where George Michael came on, and I almost burst into tears.
Yeah,
because
I can't watch that.
Yeah.
I'm not
I can't
surprised.
Even watch that. Yeah.
He said, I'm going to cry when I remember.
Well, he was almost crying. He looked at me and he said, I'm going to cry. It was he had such a lump in his throat when he said it.
He came on and he said, I just want to say, Martin, you're one of the most kind-hearted people I'll ever meet, and I want to thank you for looking after, taking care of my best friend.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my
it's
God.
Hard. It was so hard. And I could tell, I thought, he's going wobbly, he's going to cry. And I remember thinking, I'm going to cry, so it's all gone now. But
How does that feel?
So
what
genuine.
A lovely tribute to have that with that friendship that you had. And I'm so sorry that you lost him, because I feel with all of that, and it becomes this public figure and it becomes a thing, and you lost your friend, and that's awful.
To us, he was just a mate, a friend, right? And it's part of our family, and you lose someone like that. And it was the first time I experienced that you had that grief inside the house, where usually you can walk outside and forget that grief. You know, obviously it's still there, but it's not as bad. But with losing George, it was like you walked outside of the house and it was even bigger. Because
yeah,
everybody
it was really
else was
hard.
Grieving.
I didn't want to leave home. I remember I was at Heathrow Airport like 6 or 8, 7 months later. This lady just came running up to me, hugged me so hard. She goes, I'm so sorry. And I'm thinking, who or what, why? And then she started talking about George. And it was like, wow, everywhere. If I went to the supermarket, I'd have people just coming up to me going, I'm so sorry. I couldn't get away from it. And in the end, I felt like I just couldn't leave the house for a while, because people were now feeling sorry for me that I'd lost my friend, especially after we did the Brits, because it was such a heartfelt tribute to him from me, Andrew and Pepsi.
Yes.
I thought, oh no, I've even made it worse now, because now people are feeling sorry for me, and I'm tough enough to get through it, because I've had,
Come
I think,
on,
in the
Come
other
on,
side
Dave.
Of my life, I've really been well loved.
Yeah.
By my friends and my family, and I think that makes you a much stronger person.
Yeah.
So it was very strange experience that. It was really hard to get through, you know, because of that.
Yeah.
It wasn't like you could keep the grief inside your house, you know. It was everywhere.
People always say that grief is like when love feels like it has no place to go. And I suppose people feel that even more with someone they didn't know.
Yeah.
Because
I understand it completely.
But it's difficult when it's your mate. And obviously your relationship is very different. You know, that's a private personal relationship. So it's, well, no wonder you were such, he loved you and adored you so much as friends. Because you seem like very loyal, good friends.
Yeah, definitely. We are. We're very... And he didn't know many people before he was famous that knew him, if you know what I mean. So it's like feeling comfortable and trust is a big issue.
Yeah. So you guys, what's interesting is that you're working together now, which I love.
Yeah.
Because you're doing the album, you're going on tour. You've got a couple of dates coming up.
Yep.
Is it Manchester and Birmingham?
Birmingham on the 16th and Manchester on the 23rd.
Doing the symphony halls there, you know.
What
we're starting
incredible.
Small.
Incredible. This is a whole, like, as I say, talking earlier, when I'd lost my mojo and gone stagnant. I'm now singing with an orchestra, which really is, you know, up the mojo.
The other night...
I really switched on
there. The other night...
Strings,
honestly,
violins.
The other night, right, when we were doing the Royal Festival Hall.
Yeah.
And...
I love that
I
you
was,
can just throw that in.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
As
I
you
was,
do.
I was
with
coming...
With a 60-piece.
We had a 60-piece orchestra, and I was coming on one side, and Shirley was coming on the other.
Well, yeah.
And I looked at Shirley in this incredible flowing dress. She looked absolutely stunning.
Oh.
And I thought... I had this thought in my head saying, that's why we're doing it.
And we were singing Just the Way You Look Tonight, which was so apt, and we chose that song. Well, actually, it was Roman who said you and Mum, Dad should sing that song to each other.
I
remember we were singing. I had this moment where I just suddenly became aware that we are singing to each other Just the Way You Look Tonight, and Martin's in this, looking incredible in this tuxedo. I'm thinking, wow, this is so... authentic. We really are singing this song to each other.
It was a funny experience that the other night, because it was just like we're singing to each other without anybody watching.
How lovely though.
It was really
nice.
And
how nice to know that your best friend and your partner is with you all the time. Do you know what I mean?
Well, you know what? It goes back to that bit I was saying when Shirley got stagnant.
Yes.
No, I'm saying it goes back to that bit when...
Can I just tell you where we are for the listeners?
Yeah.
We're under this little ivy arch in Kenwood. And yeah. Martin used to be the troll in here.
Oh, yeah,
and
that's
the kids,
right, yeah.
Harley and Roman used to stand at the end and they had to run in. Then he would be running. I'm just having a moment. This is what makes me tearful when I have memories of my kids. So this little bit, Harley used to love it because Martin had to be the troll and she has to try and run in this little arch in Kenwood. And it's a magical little space.
This is so, I'm so pleased for you though that your kids seem really grounded, decent people.
They are.
Yeah,
really grounded and decent and not
materialistic.
They've both
got incredible work ethics, which I love.
Huge hearts. Yeah. But they've grown up with that. They've grown up with real emotion, and you know that both Martin and I, our parents were real working class people, and they had their grandparents when they were little, and they still kind of talk about, you know, how some of the sayings what my mum would come out with, like just hysterical. You wouldn't hear people talk like that anymore.
When you were in EastEnders, Martin,
yeah,
that's a sort of level of fame which is actually very intrusive, isn't it, where it's daily.
You have to,
everyone thinks they know you.
I think you have to remember as well how many people a week watch that show. You know, 70 million people a night used to watch it when we did it. So it was,
you can't turn it off,
humongous.
That kind of,
you can't turn it off. It was just a level above everything that I'd ever experienced. Great experience.
Are we going for tea?
But did you feel with your kids, did you feel, Shirley, as well, that was like, okay, this is getting, like, because presumably kids at school and things, that's when that starts becoming.
It really affected Harley, and we had to find, they were both at state school in Highgate, and then we moved to Hertfordshire because it was also nearer to where Martin was filming EastEnders, so we could see her a lot more. And Harley was really affected, so in the end I had to put her in this tiny little private school. There was only 11 in the classroom, because she didn't like the fact that everyone knew who her dad was, and that was her dad, and she didn't like it, and they called him Steve Owen, so that upset her even more. So whereas Roman had a totally different take on it. He was really proud of his dad and thought it was fantastic that everyone knew who his dad was.
Ray loved it.
Did he?
Yeah, he dined out on it.
Honestly, I cannot tell you how much I've enjoyed chatting.
It's been lovely chatting
really
to you.
It's been lovely
meeting Ray. I think Ray's getting cold now, isn't he?
I know. I love your dog and I think you're absolutely lovely. So I might have to give you a hug. I'm really sorry I'm muddy.
Not
we did a group hug.
A group hug
with Martin and Shirley Kent.
And Ray in the middle.
I'm actually going to die. I'm so happy.
Lovely to meet you too.
Great to meet you. It's lovely talking to you.
Ray, give Martin and Shirley a kiss.
See you, Ray.
Bye, Ray.
Martin.
He's a lovely boy.
I really hope you enjoyed listening to that, and do remember to rate, review and subscribe on iTunes.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.